If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Hopeful Hints, hosted by Dr. Tara, guides and supports those on the often challenging and isolating journey of women's health concerns and infertility. There's a particularly powerful episode that you should check out called All Things Endometriosis, which dives deep into understanding the condition to help the many women who suffer from endometriosis and have no idea they have it, and healthcare providers who are uneducated about it, making the diagnosis process so difficult. Check out Hopeful Hints on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Hi, welcome to Beyond the Paper Gown. I'm Dr. Mitzi Crocover. I can't wait to dive into today's conversation about musculoskeletal health in women. Yes, there are differences between men and women in terms of our muscles and bones and how they become problems for some of us, such as with knee pain or osteoporosis. Our guest today is an orthopedic surgeon, entrepreneur, and author, and she has great information about ways to prevent some of these challenges, as well as how to know what to do and who to go to when you need care. You know, I'm so glad you're here and hope that if topics like these are interesting to you, you'll subscribe to our podcast and rate us if you like what you hear on your favorite platform. And before we get started, a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not to be used as a substitute for medical advice. What I hope is that you'll take this information and discuss it with your healthcare provider about your own specific issue. It is my absolute delight to introduce you to an incredible woman, Dr. Mary O'Connor, who is an orthopedic surgeon. And in fact, she is Professor Emerita of Orthopedic Surgery at the Mayo Clinic, as well as co-founder and chief medical officer of Vori Health, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. So welcome. And if it's okay, I'm going to call you Mary.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Thank you. The other thing I want to just point out, and we'll talk about this in just a moment as well, is that you are co-author of a book, and that's how I was introduced to you through your co-author, Conwell Hawk, of an incredible book called Taking Care of You. And I ordered it, I went through it, and learned a lot from it. And so we'll hopefully talk a little bit about that as well, because when she told me that her co-author was an orthopedic surgeon, I was surprised and delighted. So we'll talk a little bit about that in just a bit. But let's just talk about musculoskeletal health and women, because this is something that I have really been wanting to talk about for a long time. So let's just start out there and just talk about what's the most common musculoskeletal issues that women over 40 experience?
Well, the most common musculoskeletal issue for anyone is low back pain. So, I mean, whether you're male or female, it's low back pain, hands down. But for women in particular, women are at much higher risk of developing knee pain than men. And the knee joint is so sensitive to weight, Mitzi. So, you know, we know that every extra 10 pounds of weight translates to an additional 30 to 60 pounds of added pressure on the knee joint.
Wow, I did not know that.
So the knee joint is super sensitive to someone being overweight and obese. And we know that women, as a sex, females, are heavier than males. So being overweight, being obese, which also from a metabolic standpoint creates a more pro-inflammatory metabolic environment, right? Just like adds fuel to the fire. So it's you know, women, we have a lot of wonderful things going for us as females, okay? But one of the things that we don't have going for us is how sensitive our knees are to our weight. And we also see that there's a big change, of course, post-menopause. That's when we see a lot of acceleration of arthritis.
And is that due to the hormonal changes?
You know, it's a really good question. And people have looked at that to try and understand that. And we don't have a clear picture. However, I will say that a few years ago, I was on a research team that really identified for the first time that there are true sex differences in the tissue of knee joints in patients with arthritis. Now, you would think that shouldn't be surprising. Right? Well, it shouldn't be, right? Because people tend to not appreciate how important sex is as a biological factor that influences medical conditions and progression of disease.
And I only laughed because I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Erica Ullman-Sapphire, who's head of the La Jolla Research Institute for Immunology. And we talked about that specifically, about the differences in sex, in specifically what you're talking about, inflammation. But it wasn't, until 2016 that research was even compelled to look at sex as a biological factor, even at the cell level. So I'm really resonating with what you say.
No, I know. And it remains an important fact that we can't lose sight of in medicine, okay? Because while we want to treat everyone with respect, and I'm totally comfortable using whatever pronoun you prefer, it's still important that we understand what someone's sex is.
Their biological sex.
Their biological sex, which is immutable, okay? So every cell has a sex, every person has a gender. We cannot change the genetics of our sex. It matters in disease and illness.
Absolutely. And to your point about osteoarthritis, it really begs the question, I don't know if you have the answer to this, but does that mean we need to look at different ways to either diagnose as well as treat osteoarthritis in women versus that of men?
We do. And we haven't advanced the science to that point yet, but there are, we found differences, for example, in vitamin D receptors between the tissue of males and females with end-stage knee osteoarthritis. I mean, there are fundamental biological differences, and why would we think there wouldn't be? Why would we assume that we're the same? We're not the same. Women are not little men.
So true.
Females are not males. Males are not females. This is exactly. This is biology. It's genetics.
And talk a little bit more about that finding about vitamin D receptors. So does that have any implications for, say, vitamin D supplementation?
Oh, too early to answer that question, especially because the tissues that we looked at were tissues of patients that basically I was doing knee replacement surgery on. And so, the opportunity to look at that as a disease-modifying agent, we couldn't research. But having said that, I have been a huge proponent of vitamin D for decades because, as you know, and I know, it's actually not a vitamin, it's a hormone.
Right.
And it matters. And we know that if you give older people, particularly older women, vitamin D supplements, they're less likely to fall. That's because there's vitamin D receptors in muscle, or that's the theory as to why they fall less. And, I've taken care of, I don't know, Mitzi, how many hip fracture patients I've treated in my career.
Sure.
Hundreds. Okay. Hundreds. It's a devastating, devastating scenario when that happens. And my own mother, who's 94, God bless her, broke her hip last year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. And she's recovered from that. But it is a huge, it's a life-altering event for the patient and for the family. And, of course, women are more likely to have a hip fracture than men. They're more likely to have that hip fracture when they're younger than the man. So, women will have hip fractures in their 70s. And 80s, and men typically 10 years later than the woman. Although what's fascinating is that men are more likely to die after a hip fracture than a woman, even when you normalize for all the other comorbidities and the other factors, which then just goes again to the question of there's so much that we don't understand about true sex differences.
Sure. But do we know why they're more likely to die?
We don't. Hmm. We don't. I mean, the data's been normalized for, heart disease, pulmonary issues, renal disease. So it's not clear why their mortality is higher, but it is, absolutely is.
Sure. And I want to get back to hip fracture because that leads us to a conversation about osteoporosis. But before we leave the knee, and we went to kind of the molecular level, talk a little bit about the differences, if you will, in ACL, for example, between men and women, because I am the mom of two daughters. Luckily, they never had an injury, but again, was made aware of the fact that, again, for those young women who are playing all sorts of different athletics, that they may be more at risk and we're seeing more injuries.
So Mitzi, an ACL tear, so that's the anterior cruciate ligament, which is one of the big ligaments in the center of the knee joint. And the reason why that ligament's so important for listeners that may not, you know, be as knowledgeable as I am about it, is because it stabilizes the knee. And so when someone tears their ACL, it is a devastating injury for two reasons. One, you can rehab, you can do therapy to rehab your knee. And if you're not at a high level of athletic competition, for most people, that's going to be fine. If you're at a high level for athletic competition, then you probably would benefit from having, quote, an ACL reconstruction. The big problem is when people tear their ACL, even if they get a reconstruction, it's not as good as the ligament that God gave you, and that knee is at higher risk of developing arthritis. So anybody that tears their ACL is honestly, it's like really high risk that they're going to have problems with that knee later in life that they wouldn't otherwise have. Now, the difference that comes into play for young girls is that girls are at higher risk of tearing their anterior cruciate ligament because basically the way that girls land and jump. So this neuromuscular connection is different, and so girls we know the epidemiology that tells us that girls are at higher risk and they have more tears. Now you combine that with, okay, and if you're female, and in particular, if you put on some extra weight as you get older or wait after you have your babies, right, that's going to further increase your risk of getting knee arthritis.
Goes back to what you were saying at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so is there any way to prevent those injuries? Are there some ways that we can train people to jump differently or anything else that could help prevent those injuries?
So there are training programs to help girls in particular learn how to jump and land in a safer manner so that there's less risk of them tearing their anterior cruciate ligament.
Sure. Now let's go back to the hip, which, you know, I made the assumption or the point that, you know, that could lead us into a conversation about osteoporosis or basically bone thinning. But are there any other factors in play?
Well, osteoporosis and, you know, bone thinning is so critically important, particularly for women. But again, it's not just about women because osteoporosis impacts men as well. It's just that men don't reach the critical fracture threshold until they're older compared to women. And this is a problem that really, honestly, could be dramatically reversed. And the way that we reverse it is, one, make sure you're getting your vitamin D. And why is vitamin D so important? Because without vitamin D, you cannot absorb the calcium, and that's what you need to keep your bones strong. We tend to think of bone as some kind of inert tissue. You know, it's like just there, and nothing's going on with it. But that's absolutely not true. Bone is living tissue that is constantly, we use the term remodeling, which means new bone is constantly being laid down, and old bone is constantly being basically removed by certain cells in the bone. So there's this constant balance of building and resorbing. And when we're young and we're growing, then the building is greater than the resorbing. But when we get older, the resorbing is higher than the building. And therein lies the problem. That's why our bones get weak. So vitamin D, critically important, and weight-bearing exercises. And so if we could only get people to take vitamin D and do weight-bearing exercises, then we could improve bone health dramatically in this country, decrease the risk of horrible hip fractures and every other kind of fracture that compromises your quality of life when you're older.
Sure. Can you make any statements about how much vitamin D someone should take?
Sure. So I take 1,000 international units of vitamin D3 a day. That's a very safe amount. It's very, very hard to take too much vitamin D. So 1,000 international units, just have a little gel cap of vitamin D, very easy, super easy. One of the ways that you get vitamin D is sunlight on your skin, because the sunlight actually converts some of the lipids, the fat underneath our skin, into the vitamin D precursor. But if you live in the north, the strength of the ultraviolet rays from the sun are not strong enough for like 9 months out of the year, that even if you like ran naked through the streets of New York City or Boston, you're not going to make any vitamin D.
Sure. And doesn't sunscreen mitigate some of that as well?
Absolutely.
Even if you're in the sunny areas like I am in Arizona here?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So that's why 1,000 international units, D3 is the preferred form. Super easy to take.
Sure. And I also want to underline for either moms of daughters or younger women listening that it's not too early to start this prevention, because you want to have enough bone in the bank, right?
Mitzi, absolutely. So, you know, we build our peak bone mass in our early 20s. And so that peak bone mass, it's a question of how long we're going to live versus when we cross what we would call the fracture threshold, right? The bone is weak enough that it's going to break with really not any significant trauma.
Sure.
You know, my mom broke her hip because she slid off a kitchen chair. She didn't even fall from a standing height. She simply didn't sit herself down on the chair properly. She slid off of it onto her hip and she broke her hip.
Mm.
Okay. So, I mean, this is what will happen, you know, 94 years old, white, female. Those are other, you know, risk factors.
Sure.
And of course, she's stubborn, because for years and years, when I would say, "Mom, I want you to take your vitamin D, there's nothing wrong with my bones."
Mm. Well, and going to that, I assume that maybe she hadn't had a DEXA or a study for that. So what would you recommend women do in terms of looking to see how their bones are doing?
So absolutely. So there are national guidelines about how frequently you should have a DEXA, which is a bone density study. It's non-invasive. You don't get poked. There's no injection. You just lie on a table. It's so simple, right? And that's a really important study to do for baseline reading, which, depending on your age and family history, could happen probably 50 plus years. Okay. The most important thing is to be active, physically active, with weight-bearing exercises, which also helps protects your joints, helps you keep your weight down. You know, it's really, truly, Mitzi, all about the power of movement.
What about things like weighted vests, for example?
So weighted vests, if you're going to go walk around with the weighted vests on, then I think that's a great option. Right. The idea is that bone responds to stress. If I took a healthy 21-year-old young man and put him in at bed rest, and we did not let him get up and walk around at all, right? He would lose strength in his bones, even in, you know, a month. So bones need to be stressed by weight-bearing exercises. So if you're putting on a heavier vest, that's going to put more stress on your bones, and that would be a good thing.
I interviewed a personal trainer just this last week, and we talked about, because he focuses on strength training. And so I'd love to hear from you about what you consider a good regimen.
Mitzi, I'm pretty simplistic here. The best regimen is the one that you do. I mean, I know that might sound simplistic, but I'm telling you, that is the most important thing. Like, so many people get hung up, women get hung up on, well, maybe I'm not doing enough, or I'm not doing it right. And I'm like, just go do something, right? Just start doing something and try to do it reasonably consistently. And women also do not focus enough on strength training, which you've just mentioned, okay? Maintaining that strength of our muscles is so important. I mean, after menopause, it's like our muscles turn to flab, okay? And that's also a reason, probably, why we get more knee arthritis, because we know from research that the quadriceps strength of women, and the quads are those big muscles in the front of our thigh, and they are the muscle that you need to walk, the muscles you need to walk. You really don't need the other muscles. You can put a device on your foot and ankle so your foot doesn't drop, but you have to have your quads working to walk. And we know that for women, the strength of their quads declines more significantly than for men. So keeping our muscles strong, especially our quads, helps absorb some of that shock and pressure and stress on the knee joint, and it helps protect the joint.
Fascinating. And, you know, you talked a little bit about supplementation. Are there any other nutritional kinds of things that you want to suggest?
Well, you know, there was a lot of interest a few years ago in glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate for osteoarthritis. Mm-hmm. And the NIH had done a big study, and they came out and concluded that it didn't make a difference. Aww. However, when you looked at some of the subpopulation, right, the people that actually had knee pain and took the supplements had improvement in their knee pain. Now what's unclear is, was the glucosamine and chondroitin helping their knee pain because it has some anti-inflammatory properties, or was it helping their knee pain because glucosamine and chondroitin are critical elements of cartilage, which is the cushion at the end of the bone that actually is like the cushion in the joint. So unclear on that, but I honestly don't think it hurts anyone, but it's unclear really how beneficial it would be.
Sure. So we've talked a lot about some serious issues, but there's so many things I think that people in general experience, aches and pains and, again, as we age and use, overuse, how does one discern between run-of-the-mill kinds of things, if you will, and something that's more serious?
Oh, that's a great question. And, you know, when I travel, if I forget my neck pillow, right, my special pillow for my neck, like, I know it because I have arthritis in my neck. A lot of surgeons get arthritis in their neck. So it's not easy getting old, right? And our musculoskeletal system takes a big brunt of the aging process. But it's important to remember that it's not just like this concept of wear and tear. There's a lot of genetics that's involved with how likely we are to develop arthritis or degenerative disc disease and other problems like that. But to answer your question, I think a reasonable approach is as follows. One, if I develop a new ache or pain, did I do something different the day before that would have exacerbated it? That is a logical reason why I can say, yes, my shoulder hurts because I did this thing yesterday that I normally don't do. Okay, if that's the case, unless you have kidney problems, just take some over-the-counter anti-inflammatories like Aleve, Motrin, ibuprofen for a couple days. Because honestly, if you went to an orthopedic surgeon, that's all they should do for you is just say, go home, take some over-the-counter anti-inflammatories, right? Give it a couple days and see what happens. So if you try that, you're not getting better, I would give it a good week of taking the anti-inflammatories. If it's get And you should be getting better. And it doesn't mean you're all better in a week, but you should be improving. And if you're improving, then it's not going to be anything, it's unlikely to be anything serious. If your pain's getting worse, then that's a concern. If your pain awakens you from sleep at night, that's a concern. But again, for the first couple days to a week, you just try to ride it out. Because even if it's something bad, you know, like cancer, because that's obviously a concern, particularly for older patients, 1 week is not actually going to be any kind of significant delay in diagnosis.
You know, many people are not sure when they should consult an orthopedic surgeon versus just going to their primary care physician. And you started a company, though, that created a different choice for people with musculoskeletal issues. Tell us about that.
I co-founded Vori Health with a spine neurosurgeon named Ryan Grant because we are very like-minded in our passion to transform the delivery of healthcare, starting with musculoskeletal care.
And you really have an integrated approach. So talk a little bit more about what you're doing at Vori Health.
So we are very focused on what we call a biopsychosocial model because we believe that we are, in general, in the traditional system, not utilizing all of the levers that we could be pulling to help, to try and help patients improve. So we surround our patients with MSK expert docs.
MSK meaning musculoskeletal?
Musculoskeletal, okay. Yes. And our docs are non-surgeons, but they're specialists in musculoskeletal medicine, typically physical medicine and rehab with a spine fellowship or sports fellowship training. So very high-level physician experts, physical therapists, health coaches, and registered dietitians for nutrition support. So the goal is that patient has this team. We create a care plan with the patient, and then we have milestones that are going to say, okay, let's get your back pain from 8 out of 10 to 5 out of 10 in the next 3 weeks, right? Let's get you on a couple weeks of some anti-inflammatories. Let's start some physical therapy. It is amazing. I have seen it, and it has exceeded even my high expectations of what I knew we could do for people.
You know, we're speaking mostly to women here. How should they address their physicians and their musculoskeletal issues and anything that they should be thinking about in case their physician is not as knowledgeable per se?
Well, you know, Mitzi, that's why Ken Wall and I wrote the book.
So let's talk about the book because it's such a fabulous book.
The reason why I was so driven to do this is because I was just so tired, Mitzi, of these women coming into my practice having had what I would call not great orthopedic care. Mm-hmm. And it's honestly because their surgeons didn't listen to them and they were not empowered enough to speak up. And we know that women ask more questions than men and they take more time. And so, you know, often I would get, a patient would come in, they didn't have a good result from prior surgery done with someone else. And I would say, well, did you actually go see your surgeon who did your surgery? Did you talk to your surgeon? No, I didn't want to go see my surgeon. Well, why not? Well, because, you know, I'm not comfortable talking with him. And honestly, Mitzi, I'd have to resist the urge, right, to like shake this person and say, why? Why did you let this person do an operation on you? Like, if you thought you couldn't talk to your surgeon or any doctor, I'm generalizing, right?
Sure.
But if you were not comfortable talking to your surgeon before the surgery, why do you think that if you had a problem afterwards, it was going to work out?
No, that's exactly true. I don't know that people feel that they have choices. And so what you're here to tell folks, and the book does, is that you do have a choice.
You absolutely have a choice.
And a right, really, as well.
You have a choice, and you should have your questions answered. And listen, I get it. Doctors have patients. They're scheduled. You know, I was always running behind. Like, it was terrible. And I never... It was. And I wasn't intentionally trying to make my patients wait.
Sure.
You know, I would just run behind because they took more time than what was allocated on the schedule.
And you were answering questions.
But we need to feel connected to our clinicians, to our doctors, and our healthcare team. That's why the trust matters so much, because it's unrealistic for patients to have the same level of knowledge as their doctors. And I mean, I experience that when I'm a patient, right?
Sure.
There's no way that I can have the same level of knowledge about other areas of medicine. So I have to find the doctor that I'm comfortable with, that I trust, that is going to be, you know, doing the best for me that they can.
Sure. Well, before I let you go, I've got just a couple more questions. And one of them is, I'd love to hear about your experience, because I think when we were first talking, you told me that you were the first female orthopedic surgeon at the Mayo Clinic. Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Well, I was very fortunate that I was accepted to the orthopedic residency program at Mayo, because it's such a great training program. And I mean, that really like changed the trajectory of my career. I maintain that part of the reason why I was accepted is because I was an Olympian. I was on the 1980 U.S. Women's Olympic rowing team. So I had accomplished something that all the guys could relate to. And at some level, and maybe this sounds silly, but I've always felt this way. At some level, they could allow me to join the club. It was easier to let me into the club. Now, I worked my ass off there, Mitz. Don't get me wrong.
Of course.
I worked really hard. And I had great mentors. And my whole career has been because of the mentors and sponsors that I had at Mayo that then have supported me throughout my career. And they were almost all men. So there are, you know, men who strongly advocate and support women in medicine, and we need that, particularly in the surgical fields where a lot of surgical fields where women are underrepresented.
Sure.
When I was a resident, orthopedics was the third from the bottom. Neurosurgery and urology had a lower percentage of women in surgical residency programs. And now I'm embarrassed to say orthopedics is the lowest. So we've gone from about 4.5% when I was training to 13% residents are female now, but the other specialties have a higher percentage. So, I mean, it's honestly mind-boggling. But this gets to culture and why culture is so important, because there continues to be this kind of myth that, you know, you have to be an athlete, although I was an athlete, but you have to be a jock and a male. And if you're a woman, orthopedics is just too hard, and you can't be an orthopedic surgeon and have a family, which is not true. I have three children. Mm. So, I mean, these are simple untruths. And orthopedics is a fabulously rewarding profession. So I love orthopedics, and I've been very blessed that I've had this wonderful career. And now I see, you know, my path as trying to transform the system to make it better for all patients, to promote more health equity, address disparities. And, you know, because I've battled that not only in as a minority in my profession, but also having cared for so many women and individuals of color that basically felt their voices were not heard.
That's so important. And then you also, again, brought your perspective, and I'm assuming it was informed maybe by your gender, in really looking at musculoskeletal health as opposed to just orthopedic surgery.
The main work that I've done on that is in the health equity space. So I chair a national coalition called Movement is Life. We just became a nonprofit last year. And the reason why we're Movement is Life is because movement is life.
So what does the organization do?
So we do a lot of things. We have an annual meeting called our National Caucus in Washington, D.C. This year it will be Thursday, November 30th, and Friday, December 1st. And you can go to our website, which is www.movementislife.com. I'm sorry, it might be Movement is Life Caucus, but Mitzi, they can find it.
We'll put it in the podcast notes, so no worries.
Movement is Life. And it's an amazing meeting because it is so cross-disciplinary. We have healthcare providers, we have community leaders, we have religious leaders, we have policymakers, because these are all the stakeholders that matter in terms of trying to address disparities. We also have an incredible community program called Operation Change. That is a program where we take 40 to 50 women that have knee pain and obesity. They oftentimes have diabetes. They're almost all depressed. I mean, it's and they're lower socioeconomic status. 18-week program, 3 hours a week, an hour of education, an hour of movement, an hour of motivational interviewing. Unbelievably successful. So no doctors, no medicines, no injections. 69% improvement in their sense of hopelessness. 18% improvement in their walking speed. So it's also the power of community, of creating a community for those women. So like this is the kind of stuff we need to be doing to change health in our communities. It's not all about seeing the doctor. The doctor is sick care. Yes. Wellness needs to be centered on the community, and we need to leave sick care with doctors and hospitals.
So well said. So I've taken so much of your time that you've given us so generously. Let me leave with one question, and that is, what did I forget to ask that you thought was important for our listeners to know?
I would just say to your listeners, first of all, thank you. I'm very honored that you've listened to this podcast. So I'm very great. Gratitude. Thank you. It is listen to your heart, listen to your gut. Because most of the time, you'll know if you need more information, if you have a question, and simply don't be afraid to ask it. Because women in particular, you know, we're socialized to be nice and agreeable and not rock the boat. And like that's just not going to help you. And it's perfectly okay to advocate for yourself, which again is why we wrote this book. In those clinical chapters, we have questions to ask your healthcare team, you know, pearls of wisdom from the experts to really try and help women be more empowered when they go to those healthcare encounters.
That's so important. Well, Dr. Mary O'Connor, thank you so much for spending your time with us today and for all that you do. And that's a big underlined all so much. So thanks again.
Mitzi, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, we certainly covered a lot of ground. So here's a quick recap of a few key points. Knee pain is a common complaint for women, and increased weight exacerbates that problem. So does menopause, as the loss of estrogen speeds up changes due to arthritis. ACL tears are also more common in athletic girls than women. The ACL is the anterior cruciate ligament, which stabilizes the knee. Learning to jump and move in ways to protect the knee and the ACL can help prevent tears. Osteoporosis is, put simply, thinning of the bone. Women are more likely to have osteoporosis, though men are at risk at later ages. This thinning can lead to fractures, such as hip fractures, which can be very debilitating. Dr. O'Connor stressed the importance of vitamin D, as well as building bone as early as possible by taking vitamin D supplements and engaging in weight-bearing exercise. Diagnosis of osteoporosis is done through an X-ray test called a DEXA. And the name of the book, co-authored by Dr. O'Connor with Kanwha Hawk, is Taking Care of You, The Empowered Woman's Guide to Better Health. And the name of her company is Vori Health. If you want to learn more about Vori Health, tune into the second part of this podcast, where we talk more about the company and what it does. I'd like to echo Dr. O'Connor's thank you to you for listening, and I invite you to subscribe to our newsletter at beyondthepapergown.com and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. We love to hear your comments. So until next time, take good care. Our podcast is produced by Patrick Shambayati and myself, and our associate producer is Kyla McMillian.
If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Hopeful Hints, hosted by Dr. Tara, guides and supports those on the often challenging and isolating journey of women's health concerns and infertility. There's a particularly powerful episode that you should check out called All Things Endometriosis, which dives deep into understanding the condition to help the many women who suffer from endometriosis and have no idea they have it, and healthcare providers who are uneducated about it, making the diagnosis process so difficult. Check out Hopeful Hints on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.